All right, this is Craig Lubow, and thank you for joining us on Radioactive Magazine today. And we have Jeffrey Mittman with us today. He is the executive director of the Missouri chapter of the ACLU, that's American Civil Liberties Union. He has been the executive director with them since May of 2013. Prior to that, he was the executive director of their affiliate in Alaska. And he also previously served as deputy national field director for the ACLU's legislative office in Washington, D.C. He has an undergraduate degree in philosophy from Yale and a law degree from the University of California's Hastings College of the Law. He was also editor of the Constitutional Law Quarterly. And that's like a law review, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And he was also an attorney in private practice. And we have Jeff with us today to talk about the update to activities affecting civil liberties in Missouri. And welcome, Jeff. One thing I want to start with is the Voter Rights, Voter Restriction Act that the Missouri legislature passed. Governor Nixon said he will veto it if he hasn't already. And then my understanding is the legislature wants to try to override it, is the last news I heard. So can you tell us about the voter restriction bill?
Sure, and unfortunately, this is just the latest in a long line of attacks on Missouri voters. I think it's incredibly shameful what the legislature has done. In fact, the governor has vetoed the bill, and we're very pleased. Unfortunately, there's the bill, which we'll come back to. There's also the constitutional amendment, which still stands. As you and your listeners may know, when the legislature seeks to put something on the ballot, the governor cannot veto that. So this November, the voters of Missouri will have the opportunity to allow the legislature to take away the voting rights of the poor, the elderly, persons of color, the disabled, college students, or we can stand up and say no, that we do not want to amend our Constitution to take the right to vote away from individuals. So what's this about? There are false claims that circulate in legislatures throughout the country where they want to limit who can vote, that there's so-called, quote-unquote, voting fraud. It's not true. No reputable study has found that there is any significant amount of voter fraud that occurs in any state in this country. Nonetheless, for 10 years here in Missouri, the majority has tried to pass a law that creates this false need to have a photo-voto government ID at the polls, even though individuals have already had to register to certify that they are citizens, they have the right to vote, and even though there's no evidence of voter fraud occurring. It's just a barrier in the way of individuals to try to scare them away from the polls. The first time the legislature passed that bill, it was challenged, and the court found it was unconstitutional. So now they want to change the Constitution, not to expand our rights, but to take them away. It's cynical. It's un-American. If you disagree with people's opinions, then duke it out in the court of public opinion. Make your argument. Don't game the system by restricting who gets to vote so that only your people get to vote and not the people whose opinions don't like.
All right. The response to that that I hear from the other side is that one is what you displaced or dispelled is the myth that there's voter fraud, but also they're saying that it's easy to do, that all you have to do is show a birth certificate or something else that would be acceptable. So would there really be that many people that would be disenfranchised if it is easy to comply with?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And again, this is sadly another one of the lies. What if you were born at a time and in a place where you were not in a hospital and there was not immediately a birth certificate issued? Or what if you're from a place where the place where you'd need to go to get a replacement copy if one was lost or misplaced was in a courthouse that's only open one day a week and you don't have a car to get there You have to take public transportation, take time off work for a boss who would fire you if you're gone during the workday. What if you don't have the money to get the replacement documents? So while for many of us, you and I, it might be simple to take time off work, to have the resources to get a certified copy of a birth certificate or other documents, there are many people for whom it is not easy. And those are just the people they're trying to disenfranchise, and those are the people who it is most important have the right to vote. You and I, the system works pretty well for us. We're in good shape. We've got a good education. We've got a good job. We're pretty well taken care of by the government. But those people who need the rules to change, who are getting the short end of a stick, those are the ones who need to have the ability to vote so they can change it. We should be encouraging them to participate in the democratic process, not making it harder for them.
What other measures, what other ways could they obtain that, what they need, if they don't have a birth certificate? And well, also the other part of that is that I don't know if Missouri has registration where you can register when you renew your driver's license or not, but if they do, would that get rid of that provision, or would people still be able to register at that time?
Right, and your question gets at something very important. We know democracy works best when we can all participate in it. The government is there for all of us. You would think that if our elected officials trusted the people and had confidence in the democratic process, they would make it easier for people to vote, that the duties of citizenship are important and they're important to be exercised. It is shameful that Missouri is one of the worst states in the country in lack of permanent absentee voting, lack of mail-in voting, lack of voter registration through various means, at driver's license, etc. What we have is the bare minimum. We don't have early voting. It really is not set up to encourage the exercise of the franchise. And what it says to me is the majority of the legislature is afraid of the voters. They know that their positions don't protect the voters. They want to take away rights, and they want to limit who can vote, and they need to be called out on it.
Let me go to another issue, and that would be religious liberty laws. Is there any legislation pending in Missouri? Did they try to get through one of those so-called religious liberty laws?
Yeah, this is one I am incredibly proud of. The coalition of advocacy organizations, religious leaders, good governance organizations, and business who stepped up and said, Missouri will not discriminate. What am I talking about? You may recall a while back that in the state of Indiana, they passed this quote-unquote religious liberty bill, which has nothing to do with religious liberty. As you know, the ACLU is first and foremost in protecting the rights of those to practice religion as they believe or to be protected from government trying to impose religion. So there is absolutely religious liberty in our state and in our country. What Indiana tried to do, though, is they passed a bill that said, your business can say, based on quote-unquote sincerely held religious beliefs, that you will not provide service to a fellow Indianan, a fellow American. Well, how did that work out? The state lost over $60 million a year in business. So what does the Missouri legislature do? They see a bad idea, and some there decide to bring that bad idea here. What happened is that the ACLU, PROMO, the statewide LGBT organization, the NCAA, Monsanto, the Kansas City Chamber of Commerce, and others all stood up and said, in Missouri, we have religious freedom, we have religious beliefs, we have Democrats, Republicans, Catholics, Christians, Muslims, Jews, atheists. We all pray as we like, we have different beliefs, but when we go out into the public marketplace, when we go to our businesses, our schools, our civic organizations, we all treat each other equally. We will not allow that to happen here. What happened is, unfortunately, the bill did pass in the House, and the House, I think, should be very disappointed in that. When it got to the Senate, unfortunately, it was just the Democratic caucus, stood up and had an historic filibuster. For 39 hours, they held the floor and refused to let the shameful bill pass through the Senate. And I apologize, it did not go to the House. It came to the Senate first. When it got over to the House in committee, we were able, with the support of many fair-minded legislators from both sides of the aisle, to kill that bill. And if your viewers want to see a very moving video, they can see the final committee hearing where a legislator spoke very courageously about what his religion teaches him, about what true religious belief means, about honoring his fellow Missourians. So it was a very bright day for the Missouri legislature when that House committee killed that bill.
Okay, so that bill is dead for this year. Is it likely to come up again next year?
So we'll be watching. In December and January, legislators start pre-filing the bills that they want considered by the next legislature. As you know, we have an election coming up this November. We'll see who comes back to the Senate and the House. I can assure you the ACLU will be watching very closely for any bills that try to put discrimination into law and try to divide Missourians instead of bringing us together.
So let me move on to next question, and that is relating to impartial or unpartial policing, what's going on with the police brutality issues. And, of course, this week we had two more cases, one from Minnesota, and if you can help me out, I forget where the other...
Louisiana.
Louisiana, okay.
Baton Rouge.
All right, where two people were killed by the police. And I know it's still early in those two cases in terms of any investigation. What is the ACLU doing on the issue of police brutality?
Sure. One thing to remember is here in Missouri, we're aware of the incidents that have happened here in the state, but we know deaths, brutality are horrible and have to be fought. We also know that day in and day out, every day in this state, in cities and counties throughout Missouri, there is a problem. And this is not a problem according to the ACLU. This is not a problem according to individuals or the NAACP. This is a problem that our state attorney general has identified. If your listeners were to go to the internet and search for Missouri Attorney General vehicle stop reports, they will find 16 years of reports from the Missouri Attorney General that show in police departments throughout the state, if you are African-American, you're more likely to be stopped, you're more likely to be searched, you're more likely to be arrested than if you are white. In some cases, egregiously so. The disparities are really horrifying and embarrassing. In other words, we're targeting persons of color and treating them differently than if they were white. What makes it even worse, as if that were not bad enough, and it is, in fact, what they find, the police, is you're more likely to have contraband on you if you are white. So the police are getting it backwards. This has got to stop. It is unacceptable that Missouri residents, Missouri citizens, day in and day out, have to deal with this kind of treatment from the police. So what have we done? There's a law that requires the reporting of this data, but there is no law that provides any consequences, any ability to change this disparities, any ability to identify the officers who are racial profiling, who are targeting black men and women and children, and to hold them accountable for their actions. So we're very pleased that this year, this past legislative session, on a bipartisan basis, Democratic Senator Jamila Nasheed and Republican Representative Shamed Dogan both introduced in each of their chambers the Fair and Impartial Policing Act, which ensures that that will no longer be the case. ACLU, working with a senator and the representative and with a coalition of individuals and organizations throughout the state, worked to have hearings in committees in both chambers. We didn't get it passed this year, but this is a process and a bill and a new way of policing that the ACLU and our allies are committed to. We work and intend that in the coming legislative sessions, that bill will pass and we'll have a new way of policing in the state of Missouri.
Okay. And when you say a new way of policing, what are some of the changes that that bill would make?
Right. Let's take, for instance, we know that there's something called implicit bias. We live in a country where there have been many years of different treatment of whites, blacks, Latinos, persons of color in the majority community. It's just part of living in this country. It's not to say that any individual is a racist or isn't intentionally treating people unequally, but studies have shown there's something called implicit bias. the best way, one of the ways to counter that is to educate people, to train people to recognize it and to act differently. So training police officers to recognize their actions is one important step. Two, the way we look at data. Within police departments, as in any profession, there are those who are brilliant and heroic and go far above and beyond the call of duty and are just amazing credits to their profession. And then there's a lot who are hardworking, do their good job, put themselves out in line, and they need to be respected for that. And then there are a few who are truly bad apples. They're either incompetent or, in some cases, intentionally malignant. If we had the data and if we use that data, we can identify who those officers are, but we need to proactively search for it and find them. We then can provide them counseling, provide them an opportunity to mend their ways, and if they do not do so, they can be terminated. And if a department is not willing to take those steps, then that department can have consequences. One of the things the bill does, it provides resources. It makes the Attorney General's office available to assist in those matters, to provide resources for training. So we know these answers work. It just means that the Missouri legislature has to commit to changing.
Now, you said that one of the things would be to offer them training, and if they don't respond appropriately, that they could ultimately be terminated. Does this bill provide any route to make it easier to terminate a bad apple? Because I'm thinking of all the labor laws and the fact that most of the officers are in unions, and they're going to obviously fight any terminations.
You're right, and there is important, there are systems in place that have to do with how individuals are disciplined, how actions are taken. What we know is there is a big piece missing, though, and that is we have the data, we know it's happening. There's not even a preliminary mechanism in place to do something about it. So that's why this bill is an important first step to say, when we see these kinds of disparities, when we see evidence of racial profiling, when we identify those individuals who are doing it, there are steps that can be taken to address it. The way that system works with the other labor laws, with the due process rights, obviously is important as well. But we can't even get to that point until we have a law in place that says you can no longer discriminate against African-American Missourians with impunity. You can no longer target a driver of color and stop them for quote-unquote taillight being out, which is essentially just saying they're driving while black or driving while brown.
You're saying that even they wouldn't be able to stop them even for a taillight out. So would this bill essentially prevent police officers from enforcing a lot of the traffic laws then?
No. What I want to say is we know that what an officer can always find a reason to stop anybody. So it's not that somebody can't stop somebody for a taillight out. What it looks at, though, is if you have an officer who lives in a place where 50% of the drivers are white and 50% of the drivers are black, and every person that they stop for a taillight out is black, what does that tell you? So it's not the laws, it's not what they're doing, it's who they are doing it to. And as of right now, we can gather the data and see who's doing it, but there's nothing to do about it.
Okay. And the argument you're making there, it sounds like this would be evidence that the officer is acting in a malicious way, as opposed to an officer who is just in need of some additional training. Would that be fair to say?
Exactly right. And that's what's important, is that the bill doesn't say one strike and you're out. The bill says the system now reports what happens, and year after year after year, when we know it is unobjected to, it is absolutely agreed to that if you are black, you're more likely to get stopped for the same behavior than if you're white. The problem is, even though we know it, one, the legislature hasn't done anything about it, which, again, is shameful, and two, there's nothing that happens to a police officer or police department. We need to stop that. We need to change that. So the way that happens is you look at the data, you identify the individuals who are engaging in this behavior, and then you teach them and train them how to do it differently. Now, if somebody doesn't want to accept that teaching, doesn't want to accept that training, doesn't want to change their behavior, the goal should be every police officer polices everyone equally, that we serve and protect white, black, brown, Asian, gay, straight. Everybody is treated the same. You give an officer an opportunity to learn how to do that, to bring their behavior into accord with what we should all want and expect. And only if they repeatedly fail to do so, if they repeatedly refuse to police fairly, then there can be consequences.
All right. Let me move on to another issue, and that would be what is happening with First Amendment issues. I know we talked about religious liberty. Are there other First Amendment issues that you're dealing with now?
Yeah, I think one of the things to think about is we have a number of cases we brought. One thing that Missouri does very well is we have what's called a very strong Public Records Act. People know it as a Sunshine Law. And what that means is that we, as the people, have the right to know what our government is doing. We have right to get documents. The press has the ability to ask for those documents. And whenever those rights are curtailed, the ACLU is ready and has built a very strong body of case law in the state of Missouri that really vindicates those rights, whether it's representing the press and their ability to get documents related to how we impose the death penalty, whether it's representing the widow of a state trooper who's asked for records relating to her husband's death. In many ways, we are able to really strongly protect the rights of individuals to know what the government is doing.
SJR 39, can you tell us what that is?
Right, and that was that bill that would have said that if you wanted to, you could close your business to somebody who is gay or lesbian, bisexual. You could refuse to serve somebody who is transgender. And that is that bill that we were able to work with the many, many allies and to stop that bill in the House committee.
One other question that I thought of, too, in relation to that religious liberty issue. You know, we see the cases like Kim Davis from Kentucky. Is there a way to accommodate her desire not to have to be involved in that without interfering with the rights of those who seek to be married?
You know, it's a really interesting question, and here's one way to think about it. We know that there are all sorts of beliefs individuals have. So, for instance, let's think about a religious sect that believes women should dress modestly. Now, that may be something that many of us believe is not fair, does not treat the sexes equally, but in this country, you have the right to your religious beliefs and to practice them as long as they don't harm others. So let's say there's a woman who's a member of this religious sect and she has to dress modestly. Now, we also have employment non-discrimination laws. If she wanted to be a secretary or a CEO at a firm, they could not refuse to hire her based on the fact she dressed modestly because that is easy to make an accommodation for. On the other hand, this woman requested to be hired as a swimsuit model. She can't do that job. She's entitled to dress modestly, but she's not entitled to tell an employer that they have to hire her as a swimsuit model and she's not going to wear a swimsuit. So she's right to have, she's able to have her religious liberty. She's able to practice her religion, but she can't expect the job to change to accommodate her needs when the very definition of the job is to wear the swimsuit. Same token, Kim Davis is entitled to her religious beliefs. She can never be required to perform a same-sex marriage. She can never be required to attend a same-sex marriage ceremony. She is absolutely free to practice her religious beliefs. What she can't do is say, please hire me into a job where I need to issue marriage licenses, and I'm not going to issue them to the people I don't like. That's not the way our civil society works. That's not about religious freedom. That's about performing the duty, the tasks and duties of your employment.
Okay, so how would we respond to her if she says, well, wait a minute, that I accept that premise, but in this case, I was hired and I was working before marriage equality passed?
Right, and again, same thing. You know, if there's this individual, let's take the modest dressed person, jobs change. Somebody is working for an employer and their job duties change, again, if an accommodation can be made, great. If not, and there's no room for that individual in that organization, that unfortunately means that he or she is no longer able to perform the duties. Here again, the challenge is Ms. Davis' responsibility was not to perform the ceremony. It wasn't to bless the couples. It wasn't to say, this is wonderful. It was a ministerial task. There are those who claim that simply by being in the same place, by being in the same room, by selling somebody something, they are, quote-unquote, approving or participating. That's just not true. And it's a false claim, and it's really an improper claim. You know, we can find all sorts of reasons. What if we have somebody who has a strong religious belief that there should not be intermarriage between the races or interfaith marriage? Are we going to allow them to pick and choose who they serve as a clerk? Let's say there's a business that believes that women should be, or men should be silent, that only women can be seen in public. Are we going to allow them to open a business and then say, I will only serve men who come in here with their wives and the wives speak? Of course not. Now, again, if that's your religious belief and you want to live in a religious commune where that's the way one engages, that's your right. But in American civil society, where we go out into the public and open ourselves for business with the public, we follow the American rules, which is everybody is treated equally.
So let me go. The last issue, we just have a couple minutes left, is drug testing. What's happening with that?
We talked about it. There is a school. So Linn State Technical University was requiring that all of its students, even though there's no suspicion that they've taken drugs, even though there's no evidence that they've taken drugs, even though they may not participate in any classes where they're at danger if they were under the influence, they required that all of their students submit to a drug test and pay for the privilege. We believe in a free society. You should not have to give up your rights to go to college or to get a job or to live in a neighborhood, to be an American, to simply be. We have challenged that. It is currently up on appeal. There is a rehearing at the entire Eighth Circuit. We're waiting for that ruling, but that ruling will be very important, and we ask people to watch for that. It is important that we not give away our rights one by one, that the government not restrict our ability. Now, certainly, if somebody's driving under the influence, for example, whether that's alcohol or drugs of any kind, that act where you can harm others is certainly something we want to make illegal. But to say that just because you want to go to school, you should be randomly drug tested and have to pay for that just because, that's a bridge too far. And unfortunately, our rights are being taken away very slowly. We hope that the Eighth Circuit will rule appropriately to protect the rights of students, not to be presumed guilty and have to prove they're innocent. And we certainly hope that in the coming years, the United States Supreme Court will look at this issue and determine that we have gone too far in how we treat ordinary Americans as if they are guilty.